from your constituency areas. I was certainly very pleased to be back from Naples. A number of reasons. It was good to touch home soil. But it was a very interesting Congress, and the high esteem, you know, and respect for Africa you're still enjoying overseas was rather welcome at the time, at the Congress itself. The applications and our universities in this regard, among them Stellenbosch, Wits, and the Cape Town and Pretoria, to do with, of course, the SKA, including right here in Cape Town. Cape Town, I think there's something called the Peninsula, is it a technical college of sorts? Is that right? It's actually building some small, perhaps I shouldn't use the word satellite, but certainly a box of goods that will be taken up to particular, just beyond the jets, I believe, but not quite into the stratosphere. Well, space, perhaps it isn't to the stratosphere. I'm just trying to remember my own physics and that. But good morning, and good morning to all the EDI people, and Ms. Idenson is here with us this morning. Thank you very much, and I'm sorry I kept you waiting this morning. But if we look at the apologies here, it's less unfortunate, but the Honourable Khadebe has just had a bereavement only yesterday, close member of family. I don't know if it was last night, but it was very, very recently, and didn't even have the chance, I think, to share that with me in the morning. But that's an apology. Do we have any others?
I have to attend Home Affairs Committee meeting for a Botswana delegation, but I'll come back afterwards. Okay, thank you.
It's very good of you. Thank you. Yourself, Mr. Herman?
Chairperson, Mr. Johnny Hong is not available this morning because he's attending another committee meeting. The other apologies that we have, it is from the Chief Director, Mr. Jeff Ndoma and Mr. Rapu. They are currently travelling overseas. To have the DG present today, and also the South Africa Trump and Main Fund Marrow is on parliamentary business in London. She will only be returning tomorrow. So those are the apologies. And Ms. Tutor will come to me, she's not able to be here. I receive no other apologies.
Chair. Then let's get down to it without any waste of time. Let's look at the agenda as it stands. We are trying to put minutes on if we do have them. Are there any minutes? Not today. Right. We may get some tomorrow then, just so that we're right up to date with minutes and don't have a whole lot left in 2 weeks' time. Then on that basis, can we please have the adoption of the agenda? Did I see a hand here? Yes. Honourable Mabasa, seconded by Honourable Mabasa. Thank you very much. We'll move straight in then to Honourable Mabasa, Chairperson of the Subcommittee on Co-ops, the Cooperative Amendment Bill. Over to yourself.
And we also had audience. And from there we moved to
tipped anyone. It would have been by mistake, but I just want to say that the team worked so well together in complementing each other to produce the draft that we have before us. The subcommittee met on the 4th and the 5th of October, as I have already indicated, and it considered the input from the DTI as it relates to policy matters, which may have a material impact on the discussion. The subcommittee then considered the inputs from Advocate Kathy Harrison, captured in Opinion 5 and 6, and I believe Opinion 5 and 6 is part of the package that we have. After receiving the inputs from both the DTI and Advocate Harrison, the subcommittee proceeded to consider the inputs and reached consensus on the bill. Although there was agreement on all matters, some proposals require further redrafting, which will be submitted for consideration by Thursday, the 11th of October. The subcommittee would like to inform the committee that the technical, grammatical, and drafting issues do not impact on the substance of the clauses amended. And the subcommittee wishes to thank all those people that I've already referred to, and but on you, the subcommittee wishes to submit for consideration by this meeting Opinion 5 and 6 from Advocate K. Addison, and Document F, which incorporates all policy decisions, and the input from Advocate Addison. The subcommittee will also like to propose that the committee proceeds with Document F and considers matters captured in red. We're using a number of colors, but by the time we come to this meeting today, I believe the only color that's not usual is red. With those inputs, the committee chair, on behalf of the subcommittee team, we're placing the draft before this committee, and we also thank, I believe, on behalf of all the subcommittee team members to express gratitude on having been given an opportunity to work on this bill, the cooperative bill. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mabasa. And just at the meeting today, we've already noted Mr. Ndormo's and Mr. Bapu's apology from DTI, the Chief Director and Registrar, but also Advocate Charmaine Bandamurva, the Parliamentary Law Advisor, that was noted, of course, as well. But we'd like to welcome yourself, DDG, Mr. Zakoro, Ms. Cookamore, okay, Advocate Strainer, okay, and Flip Junior, and Mr. Gideon Schutt. Thank you very much. Again, as we said, we had already welcomed Ms. Isaacson here. But I'm looking at the State Law Advisor, who I see right here, Mr. Adam, Advocate Alan Small, is that right? Yes, and Ms. Stoffels. Thank you very much for coming here this morning. Now, we got that very succinct report from the chairperson of the committees there, and I think we are asked then to look at the document. I understand that Wayne Idenson will contribute this morning will be as and when she commented and raised issues in the subcommittee or commented thereon, she will then speak to those. Am I correct, Dennis Idenson? Right. Okay. So on that basis then we move to F1.
Please bring to the attention of the meeting one matter that you recall the meeting, one of the past PCs agreed that the two bills should be merged into one. So that has, process has been done, so that the bill that we are looking at is embracing both that 75 and the 76 bills as one.
So here we've got the whole bill put together, incorporated as one, the F1 document. Is that correct then?
Yes.
We're all agreed. Right. We're going to be moving then to page... I'm just looking for the red on page 14, is it? 14? Yeah. We've got three colours, very distinct, or four here. The black, of course, which we expect to see. The green, blue, and red. And it is the red that we are working with. I understand the subcommittee and all the professional staff and experts are aware of that.
Yes.
And that is page 11.
Okay.
Yes.
I just want to check with members of the subcommittee or anyone that can explain. The version of F1 that we've been given this morning from the committee staff, is it the same version of the F1 or are there different F1s now that we have from the subcommittee? It's different. So it's actually F2. Okay.
No, I think... It's a very valid point. If you worked with the document, which was called F1, it was called F, not F1. So let's not, I remember one committee meeting 2 years ago, we spent half an hour on what was F and what was 1 and 2 and whatever. Are we all agreed then, Arnold Hill Lewis, now that you're looking for it?
Okay.
There we are, yes. Standalone F. Now this is F1. Right. Ms. Iden.
Sorry to interrupt you, only at the beginning. I think we need to begin on page 6, which is the first red portion on your document. Definition of cooperative.
If I can just say very briefly, in fairness to the Honourable Member, particularly in response to what the Honourable Mr. Lewis has just raised, we decided at the subcommittee on Friday that we would start reducing the colour coding, the purples and the blues. So what has been done since Friday is that if we reflect on the document now, we would find very little, if anything, in blue or purple. It would be the red and the green. The green indicating the amendments that this honourable committee has already in principle agreed upon. But we keep them there green so that if somebody would have said thoughts, maybe we can revisit them again. But the red ones, needless to say, are the ones for the committee to reflect on today. What is indicated still in yellow and red, like this one that Ms. Iverson has indicated on page 6, the yellow indicated something coming from the department on a policy kind of consideration level. That is where you see that. And may I apologize for something else before we get going, Chair. You will still find like nuts in this bill, maybe here and there, saying that should the numbering not change or something to that effect. Please pardon us for that. But it's not from a legal technical perspective being cleaned up. Needless to say, advocate Small is here in attendance today. We will take care of that, but I think for the basis of discussion and consideration, the document would be fine.
Yes, I notice now that there's some footnotes which, regrettably, I can't read. I'm sure everyone's eyesight is better than mine. But let's just move.
If I may, with your permission, referring to what is on page 6. If we look in the Principal Act, we will see that there is indeed a definition, needless to say, of what is a cooperative. The definition is not new, but the department suggested we see it there in the third line of this proposed definition, that the word or cultural should be added after social. Just to make it clear that to meet their common economic, social, or cultural needs. That is the only new insertion in the existing definition in the Principal Act. Simply those two words, or cultural.
Okay. You know, I just like to see that much. And up page 11. And now I see there's, well, a red crossed out. I won't worry about what was crossed out in red. Page 11.
If I may, Madam Chair, we're dealing there with the definition of a juristic person, which of course, as we will recall, is a new definition to be inserted in the Principal Act. Top of page 11, juristic person means A, all juristic persons, and then B, trusts, and there is the new insertion in red, just to make clear that it doesn't matter whether the trust has been established domestically or internationally, it would qualify for the requirements of this definition.
Thank you very much. Right, we move then to page 14. Yes, Honourable Linda Miller.
For those of us who weren't on the subcommittee, could we have an explanation of why, where that came from?
It came from me, and I borrowed it from the Companies Act. One of the policies surrounding cooperative med development is the idea of regional and international cooperation and sharing of resources, and it seemed possible, if not likely, that there might be people who have established trusts under wills or other documents in other countries in Africa, for example, who want to come into South Africa and participate in our movement and share to their mutual benefits. So the Companies Act contemplates that possibility and expressly says in its definition of juristic person, which refers to trusts, whether registered within the Republic or not. So we discussed where we should borrow that same vision and make these two pieces of legislation consistent, and the subcommittee thought that would be an advisable approach.
Thank you very much. Just reading page 13 and going on to the read on page 14, I see the last point here, the bottom of the page, was by the substitution for the definition of surplus of the following definition, and we then move into the actual definition itself on page 14. Yes, Advocate Stratham?
That's quite correct, Chair. Once again, if we, for the members who have the benefit of the Principal Act, you will see that there is currently a definition of surplus in the Principal Act. It is a very short definition, simply saying, means the financial surplus arriving from the operations of a co-op in a financial year. Clearly, this is a much more extensive definition that we find here in this proposal. Means the amount, if any, I will try and do as little reading as possible, Chair, but maybe let's quickly read this one. By which the total financial value received by a co-op during a particular period, whether as a result of overcharging of its own members for goods or services supplied to them, transactions with non-members or otherwise, exceeds its total financial cost and expenditure for that period. You can see that this definition tries better to clarify and expand on what we currently find in the Principal Act.
I'm looking around at members. Do you remember this issue came up quite extensively right at the beginning? Surplus, how do we look at it? So, the sound of it, the subcommittee seems happy enough with it themselves now, feels quite happy, reassured, and I think there is an adequate explanation now. There's no need to yes, well, Honourable Kodansa.
I don't know why I feel a bit uncomfortable about the word overcharging, because it would suggest some kind of touching outside the financially allowed rate, something to that effect. I don't know. Perhaps I would be advised.
Yes, I must say, that's an unfaithful one, eh? Yes, the mine and son.
This is, again, my responsibility to this definition. The original definition in the first draft of the bill were fairly confusing. So we tried to clean it up in the subcommittee. The reason why we retained the reference to overcharging, and we did that very deliberately, is because overcharging sends a signal to the receiver of revenue that there are certain aspects of the operations of operators which are not subject to income tax. Overcharging isn't anything sinister. When cooperatives transact with their members, they aren't sure what the costs are going to be of acquiring things from third parties. So they transact upfront with their members, for example, charge them with certain goods or services, as an estimate of what the real cost is going to be. Then when they subsequently transact with third parties, they may discover that they can get a better deal than they thought they were going to get. So the actual cost at the end of the transactional line is less than they first anticipated, so they refund a bit to their members. They say, well, we charged you 50 rand, because that in our reasonable guesstimate is what we thought it was going to cost us. But it transpires that we've made a good deal with third parties, and it was only 40 rand. So we have to give you 10 rand back. But it's not possible up front to be completely accurate in the charging structure to members of the cooperative. And the reason we kept in that reference to overcharging is for tax-related reasons.
Let's just get the further input from yourself, Ms. Cook-Gilmore.
Yeah, it is just that the overcharging is also the strong policy position that the BSECI had. It's because a cooperative is established because of the best of shared services and the economies of scale. So if a cooperative, for instance, wants to buy fertilizer, they buy the fertilizer, the cooperative, and they then distribute the fertilizer to its members. And that's where it is possible that they might overcharge, because the objective of a cooperative is not to make profit. It is a shared service that it wants to provide shared service. And that is where sometimes they might overcharge and then pay that back to their members. And it should not be perceived by the consumer of revenue that they make a profit. Because the intention of a cooperative is not necessarily to make a profit. It does provide a shared service to its members. And that is where that we brought that in. And also, as Ms. Ivins has explained, it makes clear that for tax purposes, that it's not profit. It's overcharged and it's paid back to the members.
So now, in short, the input costs, which at one stage may have been seen as worth 1,000 rand, valued, turns out there's been a 10% discount for some reason, because it's paid on time or whatever, or there's been a change by the wholesaler. Where does that 10% go? Do you say, no, I don't want the 10%, or do you take, you know? It's just that so often the word itself, overcharging, you know, brings to mind, why did you overcharge your members then? So I think, yeah, you know, it does require some clarity, so that it is quite clear. Then, in no other words that SARS would accept in lieu of the word overcharging. Yes.
I mean, you could spell it out. You could say, you know, the proceeds that result from the fact that the cooperative has charged its members more than the amount at the actual cost, but I don't think it changes the principle. Overcharging has acquired something of technical meaning within the cooperative movement, and it's very well understood by them.
Honourable Vandermeer? I think we're happy. Do you want to come in here, Honourable Mabaza?
Yes, when that members ask this, one starts to ask oneself and say, at the cooperative arena, we will not be there to explain. So I also ask myself and say, maybe we should set it aside for a while and think if there is no better way of articulating it such that it is easier understood by members without an in-depth explanation, without losing the intention. So I would propose that.
Thank you, Honourable Abasa. You know, the way I was looking at it, having just heard some of the inputs, was that in the final analysis, what happened? are in a co-op, it actually still comes back to you. It still comes back to you. So if you've paid a bit more, well, and it goes into this kitty called the surplus, you're going to get back evenly anyway. So I don't know. You know, I think if members understand the concept of surplus in a co-op, they'll understand that they need to get it back. If they don't understand that, then you've got a serious problem. But I think let's raise it again, if you like, when we come towards the end. I'll just flag it, but we'll leave it as it is. I'll flag it. Thank you. Right? Thank you. Over to yourself again, Advocate Stratum.
Okay, we remain on page 14. The next one there is the definition of tertiary co-op. Once again, it's not a new definition. We currently find it in the principal act. I will indicate the words that have been added to this definition. It says that tertiary cooperatives means, and then there's a new addition, a sectoral or multi-sectoral co-op. And then in the second line, whose members are, the word operational is a new insertion, whose members are operational secondary co-ops. And then the best part of the last two lines is also changed to the existing definition. On behalf of its members, in line with its sectoral or geographical mandate, and may join the national apex cooperative. Needless to say, this is new, this national apex cooperative. We will get to that in a substantive manner when we get to the latter part of the bill, Madam Chair. So, the existing definition of tertiary cooperative, but we've got those few new insertions there for consideration.
Thank you. Right. Yes, Honourable Salam.
Sir, Madam, maybe we should also hasten to say that this matter was the matter of the introduction of this pressure in the cooperative hierarchy was not discussed in the committee before. It is a matter that came up as discussions took up about what kind of an apex cooperative do we want. There were two options here. The one was cooperatives have got the freedom of choice as is enjoyed by everybody through the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. And therefore, if people want to form different apexes, anyone can. Any group of them or any group of a particular sector can form their own apex. And the other debate was to say, if we're talking about success, we must emphasize unity. And so we can't have all these bits and pieces of differences fighting against each other for the turf and not delivering on the goods that is expected by the intention of the end. Ultimately, the issue of the ability was handled by the introduction of this and the agreement for the formation of one apex in the country. So that's how the way the tertiary came up. And the composition of how it looks like will come up as we talk to it later on.
Apex has come right at the beginning, all the apexes. So certainly looks as if there's been a rationalization. Yes, thank you very much, Honourable Salam. That takes us through then to still on page 14, yes.
Chair, before we deal with the new definition of trust, I think with your permission I'll ask Ms. Adamson maybe to take us through that one. But before we get to that, in essence, I think all the amendments that we currently find in red can be classified as either substantive in nature, in the sense that they deal with considerations of policy or maybe matters of law, or possibly both. But many of them are what we can best call legal technical kinds of amendments, like even correcting typos or consequential kind of matters or underlinings that should be there that is not there. If it could have, with not shying away from the responsibility. Needless to say, they might be minor, but they must be done. And they must be reflected on by this honorable committee. But I will, as we go along, in the interest of time, with your permission, maybe just touch on those as a matter of reference, and then we try to focus on a number of issues that this honorable committee will have to discuss today that are most definitely substantive in nature. For instance, if we can just ask maybe Elise there, before we deal with the definition of trust, just to underline the whole definition of surplus, just to make the, we start making the document a bit more neat. I'm sure advocates more will appreciate that as well. So we just underline everything that we have under surplus, and then with your permission, maybe with Ms. Idas in mind, to deal with this substantive definition of trust.
Thank you. The committee may recall that at the last meeting, the decision was made to permit trusts to become members of cooperatives, and in order to facilitate that, we needed to amend our definition of juristic person, which does not automatically include a trust, so as to expressly include a trust. Once we made that change to the definition of juristic person, it meant that we needed to now define a trust. This definition of a trust is simply a cut and paste of the well-used definition in our Trust Property Control Act, which appears as the definition of trust in a number of pieces of legislation. So in the interest of consistency and not wanting to reinvent the legal wheel, we did the same.
If I might say before I carry on, I can't hear my voice the way that you're hearing it with my disposition like this. But I'm asking, is it audible the way I'm coming across?
Have you got a frog in your throat?
Not, I don't know.
Okay. I just wanted to you with concern.
No, thanks, Madam Chair. We carry on then to page 16. The middle of the page there is paragraph F. If I can, just for the sake of the members, very briefly refer to the preceding words that we find in section 2, and then we can reflect properly how it would read subsequent to this event. The purpose of this Act is to, and then F, facilitate the provision of support programs that target newly formed and emerging cooperatives, particularly those whose members are, and then we have the rest there. We can see this is not in red, but there's also a change in the rest of the definition. The insertion of persons from previously disadvantaged communities as determined by the minister, by notice in the red.
Thank you. That takes care of, we were on page 16 then.
We then move to the bottom of page 17, Madam Chair. Right at the bottom there, a co-op must comply with cooperative principles referred to in this Act. I see there's this little bit of purple there. Referred in this Act, and then we turn the page, shall be deemed to do so if. It's just a matter of better phrasing of almost the very same kind of principle, Madam Chair. Same page 18 in the middle there. The preceding words are still the same ones that we find at the bottom of page 17. And then, a percentage of the surplus is set aside as an indivisible reserve. So the change there, not at least 5%, just a percentage of the surplus is set aside as an indivisible reserve in accordance with the requirements of section 46, sub 1. I move to page 19, Madam Chair, and this morning, before I came to the committee, I just very briefly reflected on what we had read, and I picked up something here that I would like my colleagues and the members maybe just to reflect on. Can we maybe, from our perspective, read the whole of what we have in subsection 4 on page 19? in instances where there are more than five members, the constitution of a category C primary, secondary, or national apex cooperative may provide members have more than one vote, and then there's a proviso, provided that no member shall have more than 15% of the vote of all the members of the co-op. And then we have a second proviso, following immediately on the first one. Provided that where a co-op, and then we have the following words, that where a co-op has six members, which is more than five that we have right at the outset, where a co-op has six members, no member has voting rights in excess of 20% of the vote of all the members of the co-op. If I could just ask that we all briefly reflect on that portion dealing with six members, how it relates to the more than five members that we have right at the outset, and whether we are all comfortable with what this amendment is proposing.
I'm not on that point particularly, but I thought as we run across the bill, where under that number four, in instances where there are more than five members, the constitution of the category C, primary, secondary, I propose we introduce tertiary or national apex, so that wherever we end with a secondary, we also end tertiary. Thanks, Secretary.
Right. We'll throw that into the pot, but let's first look at the point that the advocate has raised and asked us to deliberate on for a moment. The percentages per se. Is that where you're coming on to land them over?
Yeah, well, again, we don't know what the discussion was. Why not 15% or 6? Is it because it doesn't work out numerically? Or can we just have a stop? But then that you have to do it then if it's for every number that can't work out numerically.
I'm not concerned about the numeric part of these percentages. I wonder whether the department could possibly assist us here. My concern is that we start off by referring to more than five members, and then we set a percentage as far as that is concerned. And then in the second proviso, we're dealing with a co-op having specifically six members, not more than something or less than something, and clearly six is more than five. So all that I'm asking from a policy perspective, how does the six relate to the five, and from the department's perspective, are they happy on the policy part of the matter?
See, we hear what you say, and I do see the department with their hand up who are going to clarify this. Let's get the clarity first from the department, and then do come and ask to that Honourable Hilders. Yes, Mr. Zikodo. Ms. Kokoma. Well, yes,
who's talking about? This was right in the subcommittee that the number didn't tally, and it was then pointed out to us that we must leave. Didn't tally. The number didn't tally. Yeah. 460 didn't work. To believe the 15% didn't work was when this member didn't tally. The reason why there's 15% why we put the cap there is to guide less dominance by a lesser amount of members or what few members can dominate. So the whole idea of the 15% is to guide against dominance. We were then asked as a department to relook that, and we then worked at the only number that didn't really work is 6. So one can really ask, can't we not combine with the previous section, and maybe we can. I don't think it's really going to be a problem, but the previous section is guiding against the same principle of dominance. So it might be possible to combine that. But the reason is really just to guide against dominance and also to make the numbers to really clear state, because for 6, the 15% didn't really work. So that's why we brought in a provisor of the 20%. But from 7 minutes onwards, the 15% is acceptable.
I do think that we need a far better form of rationalization. I mean, Good heavens, I mean, I'm a mathematician, I'm confused. Honourable Hill-Lewis.
Chair, we may want to rationalise by just making it six or more members in the first section. But the maths really makes perfect sense. If you're limiting voting percentage to 15% and you have six members, each member already has 17%. So six is the only number that doesn't work. So that's why we have to make a specific proviso for that one. To make it less than 20%. Because now if you have six members, each is 17. So that's just straight maths. If you want to combine it with the first one, we can. And I suppose that's a policy decision, but in terms of maths, it's all
there. Some input from all of you. You know, you're sitting here and you're studying this legislation. There'll be others who form co-ops. You don't have that benefit of the luxury of studying it. What do you think? Did you have hands up there, Honourable James? Honourable Flower?
Club, unfortunately, club, not the mathematician. I did general arithmetic at school, but my general arithmetic teaches me that more than 5 and 6 come to 1 and 3. 6 is more than 5. Now, if we say more than 5 is 15%, but we say 6 is 20%, then that is where the confusion comes. If we say 20%, why don't we say 20% across? And if we say 15%, why don't we say 15% across? Why would 6 be more than 5 but different from more than 5?
This is going to be the answer we're looking for here, or the solution. What will be the simplest way of getting this across? Shall we flag this one for the moment? I think it's just very clumsy. Mr. Ricordo?
Thanks, Chair. I don't know whether 15% is cast in stone, but following from Honorable Hill's argument, I think we can then say, can turn 50% to 17%, and then it covers everything, isn't it? Simple.
Chair, if we can then just propose an amendment. Do away with the second proviso and just change the highs and yellow 15% to 17%. That fixes everything.
Very elegant solution to the matter. Thank you. I'm sure that's what Lord's looking for, something simple but clear that covers and comprehensive. There we are. Thank you very much for that, Honourable Hill-Lewis, and all the members who worked on it. Can we move? Thanks.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Right at the bottom of page 19, we can see that subsections 6 and 7 are being omitted there. They are redrafted at the top of page 20, and by the way, if we can ask you just to underline subsection 6 and 7 at the bottom of page 20. All co-ops must comply with the prescribed principles of governance, and then together with that provision we have in 7, the minister must publish the principles of governance referred to in subsection 6 by notice in the Gazette within 6 months of the commencement of the Act. I think that is fairly straightforward, Madam Chair. The next one is on the middle of the same page 20. That's clause 4. If I could just read the preceding words in the Principal Act, which is section 4, sub 1. This Act provides for the registration of the following forms of cooperatives. And then we have the new insertion, there in D, adding this form of a co-op, the National Apex Cooperative. Madam Chair, you will recall the discussion in the matter that was raised by the Department, saying that a case should be made for a so-called fourth tier of co-ops. So we would have primaries, we would have secondaries, we would have tertiaries, and then a single national co-op. I don't know whether it might be worked for a while. Now that we've got a second amendment dealing with a national payments co-op, maybe just on basis of discussion and policy, ask your permission that the matter can be dealt with. The addition of the SOFIA, which would be a single national APIS co-op, and how it would be formed. Needless to say, I suppose this is something where the department would like to come in, Madam Chair.
Yes, thanks, Chair. I think following the meeting of the international co-ops alliance in Mexico, the cooperative movement from South Africa that attended that meeting, they saw the value of having one single national co-ops, a national APEX. So they proposed to us that they want to look at the Act so that the Act be changed and allow them to form a national APEX. But unfortunately, by then they were already about two so-called national APEX in South Africa. So from August, from July of this year, these two national APEX bodies have been meeting with the intention of forming one national APEX body. So in a meeting with the DTI, I'll say 4 or 5 weeks ago, they proposed that they want to submit to this committee the idea of changing the legislation to provide for the national APEX cooperative, because this is what as cooperative movement started they are working towards. So they want the law to allow them that space of forming one national cooperative. And from our side, we really support that idea, because it would be better from the government to deal with one national cooperative rather than dealing with many cooperatives, APEX bodies. When it comes to the issues of funding and resources, we rather really deal with one national cause. Although, obviously, like Honorable Zola was saying, the constitution allows people to form all sorts of formations they want to form. But if the Act would just allow the movement to or encourage them to have one national APEX, we would support it.
Right. I don't see any objections. So,
people
wanting to add a comment,
Honourable
Lewis?
Let's start the debate here. We did discuss this in subcommittee, and the department offered the explanation just given. I'm still very concerned about the proliferation of national organisations to a person. And in particular, with regards to what their job is going to be, this bill makes provision for the establishment of the development agency, number one, whose job it is to support cooperatives, to influence policy, and generally to support the movement. This bill provides for the creation of the council. That's the statement, council. So the advisory council, that's right. The advisory council, which consists of representatives from cooperatives and various other experts and academics, etc., whose job it is to advise on policy and to support the further growth and development of the movement. And then now we are asking this bill to provide for the establishment of a national cooperative, APEX cooperative, whose job it is to do the same two things. The only job that I can envision is happening, it's not spelled out here because it's a new concept, but I don't think that the explanation from the department was adequate insofar as what the job of this body is going to be, and that's different from the job of the other two bodies that this bill really establishes.
Just on this note, you see, the reason we have a subcommittee is to flesh this out. Now, I'm a little concerned because I was under the impression that everyone was aware what we'd be coming into this report that we have here. And certainly, in reading and listening to the report, it did sound like this was going to be an issue that within the subcommittee there was this difference of opinion. You follow? I am going to allow it, but the point is, I want this done in the subcommittee. If this is then raised in the subcommittee, then I have challenge. That's how I'm going to ask the chair to comment. Yes, Honourable Mabasa.
Now, as a member, Louise whispers to me now, it was discussed in the subcommittee. It's just that the concerns that he is raising were in the subcommittee, but we reached a consensus that we will recommend that the PC adopts that we have one agency. But I think that he articulates, because some of the tasks of the bodies have not been spelled out in, you know, in ways as yet, the concern stays. But otherwise, we have agreed that we will have the one APEC for the country.
So one hears what is being said, that the principle is agreed to, but it's the detail that you're having a difference, you know, that one would not have liked to have heard more information on. But as I said, in future, we would like to be alerted to that need for further discussion before we get to the PC. But now that it's here and it's on the floor, let's deal with it. All right? So what that means is it is not the principle that members, you know, are having a different opinion on, but rather this issue of the difference of task. What is Excalibur for? What is this Excalibur for? You know, am I correct? Is that not the issue? Now, can we get some explanation from the experts, consultants, the advocates, the department that dealt with this? Mr. Nkodo.
Thanks, Jen. It's just to clarify the roles of these institutions. I think mainly the co-ops, the advisory council, it's just a body that advises the minister, you know, on the development of co-ops in South Africa. They advise the minister even on the issue of policy. But the national APEX body, its role really is for advocacy and lobbying on behalf of all co-ops in South Africa. Not just the sectoral co-op, a co-op in a province somewhere, but on behalf of the co-ops throughout South Africa. That's really the role of the national APEX body. Yes, sir. No, but I thought maybe the two are just clarified. Thanks.
Arnold Salah? Yeah, I was just supporting what you said, to say the APEX is it's a representative of the co-ops and nothing else. It's not going to advise the minister or anybody against the co-ops or against any of the policies of the co-ops. It's going to advocate what the co-ops are saying in a biased manner.
Lawyer
Lewis? I just want to ask about one hypothetical. Isn't there potential for conflicts where you have, for example, one body representing both producer cooperatives and consumer cooperatives? You know, how did you envisage that the same body is going to represent both of those kinds of cooperatives? The bill in its original format had many different APEXes, precisely because those APEXs, you know, could offer specialist advocacy and lobbying in their industry.
Right. Let's get further input from members. Yes, Honourable Mabasa.
It potentially fulfills some of the concerns that Member Inwis raised, because we expect we didn't have a tertiary, you know. In other words, the tertiary does that because it focuses more on industry. It focuses more on state interests. But the APEX is an overall body that represents all interests, especially internationally, continentally, so that otherwise be secured by the APEC on behalf of all co-ops. But the last point from myself is that the APEC also, given our history as South Africa, where we have been having interest articulated in racial lines, the APEC also seeks to develop, you know, like in a South African context where we live in, say, one country.
Right. I think, members, you will have the opportunity when we do our final deliberations and consideration. I'll flag that again. Department will also look at it, but I think we seem to be in agreement. Can we then move on? We're not moving to page 21.
That's correct, Chair. We will see now a few consequential amendments on page 21 in as much as they relate to the addition of the national APEC. And I would like us to refer to these paragraphs because there's an issue that I would like to raise on page 22. If we have a look on page 21 in paragraph A, there it says, a minimum of, and then it spells out, and then in the red, in the case of a primary co-op. Then in D, spells out the requirement, in the case of a secondary co-op. Then C, once again, we have the requirement, and it says, in the case of a tertiary co-op.
And now we turn to page 22.
This one clearly relates now to the national APEC, but it says a minimum of 3 operational national sectorial tertiary cooperatives and 5 operational multi-sectoral provincial or district or local tertiary cooperatives. In any event, we're missing the words in the case of, if I can just ask that we insert the word there. Clearly this is in the case of the national APEC cooperatives, as we had there in A, B and C in respect of each form of co-op. And then there is the proviso that in the event where there is no existing tertiary co-ops, an operational secondary co-op may join the national APEC co-op. When Mr. Ndumo was in attendance, he was the one motivating this amendment, saying that there might be areas in certain provinces where they do not have existing tertiary co-ops and that this provider should be part of the act to cater for the co-ops in those areas, to irrespective of that fact, to be able to form, to become part of the national APEC co-op. So we've had the little discussion on the structure. There we can see in D how it would be composed. Before we discuss, can we just make sure that Elise has got that in the case of a national APEC cooperative for us inserted there? Thanks, Madam Chair. Oh, Madam Chair, allow me just to refer simply to what we have in the middle of page 22 there.
All right, just before that, Mr. Secordin.
Thanks, Chair. On page 21, the first line, in case of a primary cooperative, I don't know, is it following what that from the history, because it's already in the case of primary cooperative there. The one? The first line.
Apologies, Madam Chair, that is indeed a repetition there. That's quite correct. Let's simply rectify that. Sorry for that.
Aye, that's fine.
Or, if
this is a
code. And then, paragraph C, a minimum of what? Everything is taken up. A minimum of? factories in the market.
Everything has been deleted here, because the word two in brackets, so it says a minimum of operational. Clearly the figure is missing here, the number.
Maybe we'll flag that to your attention. All right. Next move, that's to be flagged and to be addressed. I'm sure you'll come up with something.
And I do refer to the middle of page 22. For the cooperative, that complies with, it is simply a matter of phrasing. It requires no debate, Madam Chair. The middle of page 22, with your permission, I move on to page 23. Allow me just to refer to the preceding words that we find in the Principal Act before we deal with page 23. That is section 6, sub 2. An application referred to in subsection 1 must be submitted to the registrar in the prescribed form and must be accompanied by, and then we have E, top of page 23, a proposed name for the co-op and a request for the installation of that name.
Right, okay, we move, thank you.
And in the middle of page 24, I just refer to the that there without saying anything about it. The next one on page 25, Madam Chair, if we can ask with your permission, Felice, with that paragraph B at the bottom of page 25, should read, by the substitution in subsection 1, and then we insert, for words preceding paragraph A. I'm sorry that we do almost like little drafting in the committee here, Madam Chair, but this is a mistake. By the substitution in subsection 1, for the words preceding paragraph A of the following, not subsection, but words. Of the following words instead of subsection. And then it is a sentence for any. And then we need to insert the word entity in brackets, square brackets. It is a thing for any, Madam Chair, I apologize, this should be done in office, but it has to be done. It is an offense for any, square brackets, entity. And then we underline natural or terrific person. I think it was Ms. Ironson who persuaded us that the word entity does not sit comfortable in this kind of context. So if we could just rectify that. I move on, Madam Chair. We're on page 26, the very same thing there. Not entities, but natural or juristic person. Allow me just refer to below the middle of page 26. A co-op whose members. It's just a matter of preference of phrasing. Page 27, close to the top there. Every group of individuals or co-op that intends to register as a co-op must submit a constitution for the proposed co-op in a prescribed manner and form to the registrar for registration. Once again, allow me to refer to the page at the bottom, page 28, Madam Chair. Those words, unless stated otherwise, should be taken out as a consequence of the bold black being omitted from the bill. Merely a reference on page 29 at the top there of members as may be stipulated. It requires no debate, Madam Chair. And we will see now quite a number of these kind of changes here with respect not requiring any debate, Madam Chair. On page 30, if we can just briefly reflect there without me even reading it, it's merely small changes, there's no consideration of policy or principle involved, Madam Chair. The very same applies to the top of page 31. And just below the middle, small figure A there.
turn to something that is a bit more substantive on page 32, Madam Chair. Top of the page, sub 2. Category A, B and C primary cars are primary cars that are excluded from legislation applicable to deposit-taking financial co-ops and cooperative banks. Then, just below that, we have two definitions in a section where this terminology is isolated in that section, and quite a substantial change to the first one. A, projected annual revenue, means estimate of the gross value of the economic benefits that are likely to be received by a newly registered co-op as a result of its ordinary activities during its first financial year. The second one, annual revenue, means the gross value of the economic benefits actually received by a co-op as a result of its ordinary activities in a financial year. It is a matter that was fairly extensively discussed in the subcommittee, Madam Chair, and arriving at those definitions. Top of page 33, Madam Chair, merely a reference. What we have there deleted is dealt with in clause 84. Small things on page 33. Once again, can I merely refer to page 34 and the small changes there, Madam Chair? It's about in the middle of page 34. Top of page 35, if I can just read the preceding words, that is section 21, sub 1, in principle act saying a co-op must keep at its offices the following. If it has a supervisory committee, the minutes of meetings of that committee in the minute book. Simply that requirement. The word managers we will see here and there in the text has been substituted with the word employees. Once again, the word managers not comfortable with the context of co-ops. Madam Chair, page 36. Can I merely ask that we reflect on what we have here on page 36 once again, non-substantive kind of amendments. The very same thing on page, no, I'm not being fair to you, Madam Chair, on page 37. Can we read the clause 25? Despite any provisions contained in its constitution, if a co-op determines that the repayment after the death of any member of the co-op of the nominal value of, and then A, that member's membership, B, any other amounts held to the member's credit, including any member loan, and C, any interest accrued on those amounts to the date of the payment, and then the words would adversely affect its financial well-being should be indented, if we can ask Elise to indent it from would adversely affect, to make it clear that it applies to A, B, and C. And then, Madam Chair, this is possibly something again for discussion. If I can, Mr. The Honourable Malasa will correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think that we quite reached consensus in the subcommittee on this one, but be that as it may, here is the proposed amendment. So the question is now, in those cases, what can a co-op do with that member's interest in the event of death? The co-op may direct that repayment be deferred for such period as is permitted in terms of its constitution. Madam Chair, this is more a matter of policy than it is a matter of law. I'm not the right person to keep on speaking on this one. Say for saying maybe that if we do consider this one, we must keep in mind the interest of the beneficiaries of such a member having passed away and his or her financial interest being locked in with within the structures of the co-op. How long should a co-op be allowed to keep that financial interest locked in, and how does it relate to the interest of the beneficiaries? I leave it at that for the time being, Madam Chair.
Need to hear what Ms. Iverson says before we come over to members.
Thank you. This issue was something that I raised in paragraph 6.1 of my opinion 6. I expressed concern that the provision as it stood before I commented on it would allow for a situation where a cooperative might postpone repayment of a very needy dependent's inheritance for indeterminate, indefinite, forever kind of period of time. Now, I appreciate that this is essentially a policy issue and therefore it's not my place to take a view on it. However, my recollection is that after substantial debate on this point by the subcommittee, we decided that there would be a maximum permissible extension period, and I seem to recall that it was agreed that it should be set at 2 years. But I stand to be corrected, but that was my understanding of where the subcommittee had reached on this fairly contentious issue.
We've all got the written opinion in front of us as well to study. Wonderful. So I'm just going to get the input from the chair of the subcommittee first and then take you on, Honourable Malata.
Yes. The views that were contrasting here were in two interests. The one interest is the chances of the co-op to survive with the amount that is paid out to the deceased. And in as far as the withdrawal could jeopardize the existence of the co-op. But at the same time, the balancing interest was the interest of the deceased member or the dependence of that deceased member, that the funds must not be locked into the co-op for too long. I think it was, the way I can remember it, it was to be, he had paid over to the deceased member as soon as possible, but not beyond 2 years. So in other words, if the co-op could be able to pay out within a month, so be it. But it must not have the luxury of exceeding 2 years. Thanks, Secretary.
One certainly has the what informed your reasoning there, the position. Let us hear from other members. Thank you. That was Chair. Honourable Van der Merwe.
Now, Chair, it seems to me that we've now crossed out 2 years, and that you are saying that such a period as permitted in terms of the Constitution would then imply that we have to specify when co-operatives are writing a constitution that this provision must be in there. Otherwise, we must put it back to the 2 years, it would seem to me. Because otherwise, we've got to go to the other part and say, in writing a constitution, the following must be borne in mind, including a 2-year period for the... So it would be simpler maybe to just put it back in here.
My apologies for interrupting. The original is the black. I then suggested the red that had been crossed out. So it wasn't in and taken out. It was not in. I put it in, then they took it out.
All in the deliberations of the specialists here. I'll take the subcommittee first, Honourable Kulasa, before yourself. All right. Let me take the subcommittee first. Honourable Gil Lewis.
Just confirmed with the chair of the subcommittee, I think actually that it's an error. As far as I recall, we did agree on 2 years.
Right, so subcommittee feel quite strongly. Okay, having heard that, let's hear what the Honourable Kovada has to say.
Chair, I am just asking if that money locked up for 2 years would be accruing interest as is the normal practice. And if so, what then would be the situation with the matter that is raised by the chairperson to say what then would be the position with the matter that he raises to say that if the payment is made immediately, it would jeopardize the financial
standing of the cooperative.
I wanted to raise something in that regard myself, because it worries me when the chair did raise the chair of the subcommittee raised this issue, that one of the issues that was considered in the subcommittee was, well, what if that amount is pulled out immediately within a year, perhaps, or whatever, would jeopardize? Would there be any way one could talk about a portion of the funds? Because there's also the issue of the dependents. You say the deceased member and now dependents. Is there not some way to balance that against the exigencies of the dependents, in which a portion would be paid out and the balance a year later, and that certainly the full amount would need to have been settled within a particular period? Is that worth looking at? I'm just wondering. Because, in fact, it does occur in some trusts and so on. Do you want to say something on all about that?
The principle that you are raising has not been one of the options that we considered. But as you raise it, you know, it becomes interesting to say it would have been good if it had been one of the options. It's just that we did not have this. So we were looking at the whole club going, you know, as a unit. But that's a view. Maybe it's maybe this point should be deferred so that we also consider what the proposal from the chair.
Can we take this back to the subcommittee and include that option for consideration? So I do take the point that Honourable Babas is also referencing there. Thank you. Okay, we move. That is page 38. Yes, well, look, just on the brain issue, I thought we had just come in, as the man said, but now see everyone, they come hanging out. Suddenly, all right. Perhaps we could talk of about 5 minute break, because we know what 5 minutes means to people. Thank you.
Now, I know that you've got the eye challenge. Yes.
No, it is a bit bright here, yeah. Right. Can we move this? We were on page 39, if I recall. Am I right, Advocate Graham?
That's correct, Chair. Chair, needless to say, please, I'm not shying away from the responsibility, but there we have on page 39. Just a number of those changes, not cutting any ice whatsoever, Madam Chair. For instance, at the bottom of page 39, paragraph B, right at the bottom, must be there is not fair and reasonable, but reasonably reliable information. May I? Once again, on page 40, number Chair, there is nothing substance requiring any discussion there on those little bed insertions. The very same applied to simply the word earlier being inserted on page 41, top of page 41. Page 42, for purposes of the section, activity plan means document that summarizes the operational and financial objectives of the co-op and the insertion for the next financial year. And a few subtle changes in paragraph A and B. Another minor one on page 43, Madam Chair, not according to the prescript set up, but subject to any requirements, just better phrasing. Page 44, subsection 6, the members of a co-op may be, the members of a co-op may by special resolution passed at a meeting, we delete the reference to two-thirds of the members present at the special meeting. Page 45, Madam Chair. Page 45, that is clause 38. A director or employee of a co-op may not accept any commission and the rest
maybe this is something that I should not skip over. I'm going to repeat, a director or employee of a co-op may not accept any commission, remuneration or reward from any person for or in connection with, and then it is important, the qualification, any transaction to which the co-op is a party. So no remuneration in respect of any transaction in respect of which the co-op is a party. There might be a word missing here, my colleagues can quickly assist me, but there is the principle. In writing to the board, Madam Chair, my own text is letting me down here. But, you know, in fact, the amendment is saying that the rest of it should be omitted. So simply, no remuneration in respect of any transaction to which the co-op is a party. From unless... Ms. Iris, if you don't mind, is my memory not serving me well on this one? Was that indeed the intention?
This issue emanates from paragraph 8 of my opinion 6. My recommendation was that we redraft this whole provision to bring it in line with the position as it is in company law and other branches of our law dealing with this particular duty, which we classify as a fiduciary duty. My suggestion was that we redraft it to say that no director or employee of a cooperative may derive any personal gain or benefit through or by virtue of their position or office as such, unless it has been properly disclosed to the cooperative and the cooperative has consented to that director or employee retaining that benefit or gain. And I suggested that we copy and paste from the Companies Act all of the provisions dealing with what would be proper disclosure, proper consent. So in a sense, I was suggesting that the existing draft was too narrow because it only prevented personal gain arising out of a transaction that the cooperative was a party to, which is too narrow. Improper gain may come in other ways to a director or employee. And then I suggested that we have the standard legal proviso, the exception to cater for the legitimate, above board, disclosed, consented to gains. And as I understood it, the subcommittee had accepted all of those proposals. So looking at this draft, I think needs to be completely revisited and redrafted, this provision.
Okay, I think we need to look at that more carefully. I'll allow you to kind of nod as we get straight and then come over to the committee.
Madam Chair, I'm in agreement. I clearly recall that discussion and that kind of consensus. There is simply redrafting to be done on this provision, Madam Chair. Along the lines that has been explained by Ms. Ironson, that there should be not a blank prohibition on receiving the remuneration. That provision should be made in certain instances in line with what we find more already in the Companies Act for a person to be entitled to such remuneration, provided that certain requirements have been met. This is a matter of drafting here, Madam Chair.
So, with the committee, looking at the subcommittee first, you seem to be in agreement that this, 38 on page 45 there, that would be revisited, redrafted in line with what has been agreed to by your advocate, Ms. Ironson. Fine, let's just flag it then to allow for a redraft. Thank you. We will move then further down the page.
We remain on page 45, Madam Chair. This is the preceding word we find in the Principal Act, Section 39, Sub 1. If I could just briefly refer to that. A co-op must, in writing, notify the registrar and then the word offers missing of the reason for the resignation or removal of a director from office. And E, working the word off, is missing of such further information as may be prescribed by the minister, and both D and E should be underlined. My apologies for that, Madam Chair. I move to page 46, sub 4, all membership shares issued must be of the same class and ranking for all purposes, including rights, liabilities, and interest payments. On page 47, the preceding word starts at the bottom of page 46. The surplus, that is, and then we go to B on page 47, not set aside in any additional reserve required by any other applicable legislation or the Constitution, and not used in the purchase of membership shares in terms of section 44, sub 3, what can be done with that surplus may be placed in debt, may be placed in such reserve or reserves, and used for such purposes as are authorized by the Constitution. There's a bit more of a substantive proposal on page 48 dealing with the reserves of co-ops. During each financial year, a co-op must retain indivisible reserves equal to such amount as may be determined by its constitution. So the discretion is on the part of the co-op to, in its constitution, determine the level of these reserves. Then the provider, provided that it shall not be less than 1% and not more than 5% of its net asset value as reflected in its most recent report or independent reviewed report or annual report. So clearly, I'm sorry, there's a hand, Madam Chair.
Yes, I'm just asking us to consider that paragraph, provided that it shall not be less than 1%, that's okay, and not more than 5%. I'm wondering whether we should limit the co-op in as far as it wants to put into a reserve. Assuming it wants to put in a 7%, should we say that is, oh no, now I recall. Now after that, there is another paragraph which takes care of that. Oh no.
So that comes the first input. Right, thank you.
Madam Chair, I was slightly confused in the subcommittee on this provision, but what Honourable Vasa has in mind is just lower down. We'll get to that in a sec. Sub 2, the reserve referred to in subsection 1 shall be indivisible amongst members of the co-op, and then there is sub 3. This section does not prevent a co-op from making provision in its constitution for, we added the word additional reserves. So irrespective of the requirement that we have in sub 1, here's the power to set other levels in respect of additional reserves. I step off, Madam Chair. I'm not going to refer to the word audited on page 49, nor to the 14 days on page 51. If I may move to page 50, to Madam Chair, suffix, there's a whole new provision in paragraph B, just at the middle of page 52. I'm not going to read it, but what it tells us is that if submission of reports are delayed by a co-op, then the registrar must be notified in writing as to what are the reasons or grounds for such delay. And then what we have in sub 7 is what is the onus on the registrar in respect of those reports. We will see there that he or she must consider the report and where necessary request further information or refer the report and views expressed to the agency for assistance to the co-op in terms of section 91. So B, the delay and why the delay and what should be done, and then in 7, the onus on the registrar. Page 53, sub 3, we deal with the registrar, the owners on the registrar, take other similar appropriate steps and facilitate compliance by the co-op with cooperative principles. just below the middle of the same page, 53, clause 49, a person is disqualified from being an auditor or independent reviewer of co-op if that person, small Roman one, has a personal or material interest in a co-op or in any of its affiliates, a lending person, or where the co-op is a secondary or national, should we not say all the national apex co-op, because there is only one, or where the co-op is a secondary or national apex co-op in any of its members or in the business of any of its directors or senior employees, that would then be grounds for being disqualified as an auditor. I'm sorry, I missed that.
In all these cases, don't we then have to add tertiary as well? I don't know. I'm asking. No, you meant.
Yeah. I need to offer another apology, Madam Chair. Or we'll copy the secondary. Or national agent. I'm not aware of any reason why tertiary should be exempted from what is provided for in
there. Okay, yes. Okay.
Right.
Bye.
Page 54. There's just a new sub 2. A formal finding, maybe we can just briefly reflect on this one. Formal finding by the relevant accounting regulating body of a contravention of its code of conduct or a conflict of interest will be sufficient proof for purposes of subsection 1AB. C or B, we find those just above there. When a person does not act in accordance with a code of conduct pertaining to the registered professional body, and the next one is in B, auditor or independent reviewer of co-op, in any other circumstances that are considered to constitute a conflict of interest in terms of the code of professional conduct applicable to the relevant auditor or independent reviewer. So what this all says is that if an auditor has been found guilty by a professional body of this kind of conduct, then that mere finding will suffice for the purposes that we are finding in subsection
2. Yeah, I would like just a technical comment just that from my experience with the company. Like, the reference to relevant accounting regulatory body is very problematic in the sense that the majority of these accounting professions that are allowed to do the independent review do not have a regulatory body. They only have a voluntary association which sets the disciplinary code and conduct rules. So we step into the same trap in the Companies Act with the same terminology, and we had to amend it at a later stage to properly apply the provisions.
Thank you very much. Have you heard that? I mean, as a technicality, then we want to address that shortly as we can train them. Did you want to come in then? Yes,
I think that we can certainly make a drafting change to capture the situation where the auditor, reviewer, etc. does not have a regulatory body but some kind of voluntary membership, which would define the correct description for those other bodies, but that's not that's a drafting issue with respect.
I will save that because it means you'll come back with something else. Writing soon.
Chair, on page 55. Allow me there to merely reflect on the new sub 2 capital A, just above the middle. The board must, within 30 days of the appointment of an auditor or reviewer, notify the registrar of such appointment. It is merely the owner to notify the registrar of appointment of auditor or reviewer. We can turn to page 56, Madam Chair. the fees payable to the auditor or independent reviewer in terms of sub-fee must be approved by the registrar. So approval from the registrar for the fees applicable in respect of the performance of these functions. Madam Chair, on the rest of page 56, there is nothing of substance. With your permission, a mere reference would suffice.
59.
The very same applies to page 58 and page 59. No substance whatsoever. On page 60, it's a consequential reference to the National Apex Co-op, which is the new or final level of co-op. Consequence amendment on page 61, the very same, Madam Chair.
So am I correct to understand that, you know, when we make these references now to the national cooperative, it follows consequentially that it's referring to one, the national
cooperative. Thank you. Thanks, Madam Chair. Yes. Madam Chair, I undertake not to skip over anything of substance.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
But in the same breath, I think then we also have to add the tertiary, because we've added that everywhere that it refers to secondary or a national apex, we have to change it to secondary, tertiary, and the national apex. Yeah.
That it's only one, and not, you know, the two or three that were running around. So I think what we need to remember is we're making reference now to substantive issues. Right, so let's move ahead then quite speedily.
Thanks for that permission, Madam Chair. There's nothing on 64, 65, 66, 67, and please, my colleagues will rein me in if I possibly skip over something in the process. 69, 70, it looks as if we've got a few changes there, but it's a matter of phrasing or rephrasing the very same kind of thing. 71, there's nothing. 72, 73, 74, what we have at the bottom of 74, top page 75, rephrasing of the very same kind of matter in respect to the tribunal. If we can maybe just very briefly on page 76, Madam Chair, sub 3, the editor must, on receipt of information from a person wishing to examine a document as contemplated in sub 1, that the document has not been submitted, wishing to examine, that the document has not been submitted or has not been submitted in accordance with the requirements of this Act, investigate such information to determine why the document has not been submitted or has not been properly submitted. And then B, what should happen then? There should be rectification of such a document. There is nothing on 77, Madam Chair. Can we just refer to page 78, 79? Even on 82, all those pieces of red, there's no substance whatsoever, Madam Chair. Very same to page 83, I'm afraid it's becoming a bit monotonous, but then we're running through what is minor. Page 84, page 85 needs no reference. Page 87, I'm still turning the pages, Madam Chair. 89. Just maybe a quick reference to what we find at the top of page 91. The agency is funded by, and in these new insertions, top of page 91, C&D, donations and contributions lawfully received by the agency and all other monies which may accrue to the agency from any other legal source. Is there a hand, Madam Chair?
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, page 89, the paragraph of you reporting the agent. I just want to suggest to the committee. committee that we change that one F submission one into the agency must report to the Minister of Trade and Industry. I think to the Minister via the Chief Directorate Co-Office. Other than that, the agency reports out to the chief director. Because I think that might create problems in the future. Chair.
So we're talking of page 89, 91F, reporting by agency.
Yeah.
I need to look into issues because if it's a minister and perhaps titles change, various other things, one thing, but the minister also has the power of delegation automatically. Yes, Honourable Mabasa?
I agree with the DG, but I also think, does it not suffice to say the agency must report to a minister? As for how the minister wants to delegate, that becomes a matter of practical. So that I'm arguing that we shouldn't have fire or like.
Yes, I think the colloquialism was just explanation. Right. So if you're saying to the minister full stop, that would be page 89. Are we all agreed on that? Fine. And I'm hoping all the experts and so on, and then they're aware of something, we're moving along quite fast. Please raise your hand. Yes.
I think that will be in line with all other agencies. And that is in line, they report to the minister. Not to a chief director.
Yes. Thank you. Going on then,
administrator. Instead of so repetitively referring to pages and pages by myself, once again, my colleagues will interrupt me. Straight away, but allow me to go to the next substantive one, which is on page 98. Page 98, we find the preceding word on page 96, just below the middle, 96, 91 capital N. This is in relation to the tribunal, or a member of the tribunal acting in accordance with this act may, and here we go to the top of page 98, where the agency has referred a co-op to it for the purposes of placing the co-op under judicial management, comply with the judicial management provisions set out in section 77 and schedule 1B. Just to make it clear that this is a power of the tribunal to refer the matter for Judicial Management Act provided for elsewhere in this bill. Well, once again, Madam Chair, I'm not going to refer until we get to the next substantive or very substantive matter. I've got it marked here on my text, and with your permission, I would like Ms. Iverson to refer to page 113. And this briefly reflect on what we're having in the middle there, paragraph B, small Roman 2. You will recall the equity issue.
These are provisions which apply to cooperatives that are in financial distress or on the brink of insolvency. The provision cases for the possibility, as is the case with companies, that those distressed cooperatives might enter into some kind of an agreement or compromise with their creditors to ease their repayment burdens, and it's customary that they get laid off, they get an extended period of time or reduced interest. And the provision used to also say that one of the things they could agree with their creditors would be that instead of repaying their creditors either fully or in part, they would give their creditors a membership share, which the original draft referred to as an equity share in the cooperative. Now, there are two difficulties with that. On a technical, formal level, cooperatives don't have equity, they have membership shares, so there's a terminological problem there, but that's not the real concern. The real concern would be that then you could have creditors, who could be anyone, banks, any third-party creditor, becoming members of cooperatives, which seems to conflict with the very principle, the very concept of a cooperative as a community of cooperating members with a certain kind of personal relationship with each other. So the suggestion was simply to take out that possibility of distressed cooperatives inviting or permitting creditors to take them over.
Right. I think that's quite clear, and we would want to put a clause in that in any way conflicted with the concept that we're trying to promote here of co-ops. So the DTI itself seems to be in agreement with that. Am I correct? Yes?
Members are happy with that.
So thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Madam Chair, page 130, 130. It is not that substantive, but in fairness, let's refer to it. The preceding words we find in section 97, sub 3 of the Principal Act, which says, on receipt of application in terms of sub 2, the registrar must issue a directive to the co-op specifying, small Roman 1, the respect in which the Constitution fails to comply, 2, the period allowed for rectification, and 3, the consequence of non-compliance. We came now right to the end, Madam Chair, but unfortunately, something that we might need to briefly discuss it on page 132, there's a provision there where the proposal is that it should be deleted. It's below the middle. Sub 2. The provisions of the sectional type of act apply to any unit owned by the housing co-op or transferred in ownership to a member if the provisions of the sectional title act have been complied with. So what this provision does is to say it makes applicable the provisions of the sectional title act, which is an act not administered by the Minister of Trade and Industry, which is an act not administered or abided by the Department of Trade and Industry. So, in a sense, the way we see it, my colleagues can possibly reflect a different view, is that it is important with respect for a minister in an act administered by the DDI to make a legislative provision in respect of an act that is administered by his or her colleague in another department. I don't know whether Ms. Eilison or anybody else would reflect else or maybe amplify, but that is the reason for. It was explained by Mr. Ndumo that they felt from a policy perspective that it was necessary for this to be done. There was in fact, I think, a request coming from housing to this effect. But clearly, I don't think, once again, with respect, that your Honourable Committee would take kindly to almost legislating in respect of an act that another minister is responsible for managing.
Thank you for that input. Yes, Honourable Mbaba.
In the comment, Chair, we thought that it would merely bring in too many players into a housing situation. And one department could be played against another department, and so we thought, and the co-ops run across all departments, so we are not bringing in departments as well. So if we bring in housing, why not bring in something else?
Excellent point. Thank you very much. You're all happy? Yes. The members seem to be quite happy with that understanding. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I am done. Save for, with your permission, I hope I'm fair to Ms. Iverson, to request Ms. Iverson to deal with the last state of net, which we find on page 133 to below the middle of our goal. On my part, that is it. I'm done.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Ms. Eigenson?
Thank you. These provisions concern worker cooperatives. Now, worker cooperatives can have two types of members. Firstly, they can have straight members who don't work in or for the cooperative, and they can also have members who are also employees, as we would understand that term in labour law. One of the policy issues this committee and the subcommittee needed to address was whether those worker cooperative employees should be governed by the general ambit of existing labour legislation. Bringing them within the ambit of legislation and labour law legislation and regulation would provide those employees with some very significant benefits and protections as employees, ranging from UIF protection against unfair dismissals and so on. The counterside of that is it places obligations on the cooperative employer. Now, the first decision that the subcommittee made was yes, those employees should get the protection of labour legislation, so we should in principle make them, those worker cooperatives, subject to labour legislation, but we do need to cater for the situation where you might have a relatively small, newly formed cooperative, for example, which cannot comply with all of an employee's normal obligations under labour legislation, the minimum wage, hours of work, etc. Now, the way we cater for that in case of any employer who is battling to comply is that the law makes provision for them to get an exemption or partial exemption, provided they can satisfy the relevant authority that they could grant for that exemption, from having to comply with all or part of the labour law employer obligations. The place you get those kinds of exemptions from is either a bargaining council, if there is an existing bargaining council operating in your sector of operation, or where there isn't a bargaining council, you get it from the Minister of Labour. And the subcommittee agreed that seemed a reasonable way of catering for the need to protect employees of worker cooperatives and alleviate the burdens, where there are good grounds for doing so, of worker cooperatives which simply can't comply with the full range of employer obligations. And that is what these provisions are trying to record.
Right. Understand the
murmur? I think we had in the public hearing a compelling input from one of the unions, I think it was. And I think that the problem that I think this will address is the fact that there are organisations who convert co-ops to subvert the rights of their workers. And if that addresses this, then I think it could.
I hope it does, because it did seem as if they could get up to a number of permutations around the law. And it was quite a worry, but I certainly like the opportunity to study that input that we had first before just simply saying, yes, this is going to cover it. I do have a challenge. I haven't refreshed my memory on that input. Honourable Hill Lewis?
Chair, the subcommittee agreed on this issue. Just one other thing that I'm spotting now for the first time, I just want to check with Ms. Hutchinson if this is okay, the use of different words, exemption and variation, is that okay? Or do we need to use exemption throughout?
No, because the exemption might be qualified. We'll let you off strict compliance, but we want you to do something slightly different, which would be a variation.
In which case, shouldn't we only use variation then? Because this is exemption from the bargaining council or variation from the minister?
I think that throughout, whether it's the application is being made to the bargaining council or the minister, we should refer to both the possibility of an exemption or variation.
It seems that I'm the only one who does have a question mark regarding that one, but I wish to retain that question mark until I have studied the input, which was quite a serious one that we got from a particular union. Before, writing this all out. Thank you for the moment, and
mean to study that myself. Okay. But nothing else. I'm looking at this last one here. Oh, I think some same issue. Right. Seem to have gone through the substantive changes in this regard. There are a few flags, some of which there's no doubt would need to go back to the subcommittee, but then there were a few other flags, one or two of them, that perhaps if we had more time we may have been able to agree on them. So let me check my own time and the schedule. We'll have a bit of time, so I ask members, not that I'm, you know, wanting to take you right through to one, absolutely not, but let's have a look at what we flagged and check out whether or not some of this could not have been discussed here. Yes, Honourable Vander Merwe?
I have a general comment on one of the issues that is flagged, but the comment I wish to make refers to a principle about legislation. We had a discussion here about various words that were inaccessible or unable to be explained if we were not there to a particular cooperative. And I think we have to accept that the law is written in such a way that it is not accessible to every human being on the planet. In fact, it's accessible to very few human beings on the planet. And while I think we have made every effort to keep the language as simple as possible, there's reference and cross-reference that will never make it comprehensible to ordinary folk who do not have the background that we and others do. So I think we must ask the department to do a booklet on this, and I'm sure it's part of the same anyway. You know, giving the simple terms of what is expected of cooperatives, so that could be our accessible tool as it gives to the cooperative movement. That's the first point. The second point I wish to make is about the program chairs, about tomorrow's meeting, but you will call me out of order now, I'm sure, because we either have other meetings tomorrow. But I wanted to know when on the agenda it's not listed, we might be discussing the program.
We were all faced with couple of challenges about extending the meeting to this afternoon, because I'm sure you're familiar with the changes that come about and that in the program, the broader program, and that the one has called on all chairs to attend to a meeting with the Auditor General tomorrow, you know, afternoon. Is it this afternoon? Right, this afternoon. And that almost precluded us extending today's meeting, which I had a challenge with. On the other hand, I was talking to Mr. Hermans and asking him, what about Thursday? Perhaps taking into account part of what you mentioned. But I'd rather discuss that after just dealing with this. Thank you. I was talking about a couple of things that had been flagged, if you remember, and perhaps some of them we could deal. Yes, I'll talk about.
Sorry to interrupt you. To add to what Honourable Vander Merwe suggests about the booklet, if the department could consider also including a sample of a constitution that would govern the thing, it would be
an excellent idea. Trying to make this accessible, user-friendly, if you like. So there are 2 points being made there with respect to the booklet. I'm looking at this one here on page 30. Yeah, just on page 45. Yes, Honourable Mabasa?
On the very point that was being discussed, I think that will assist a lot, but it will mean there must be something that indicates, even if it is the introduction of that booklet, to say for intricate arguments, legal arguments, something that says where arguments arise, reference must then be made to the actual full act. In other words, when that simplified version of the paragraph is read, it must not be understood.
and the other two that are in the simplified version. But for engagements, legal engagements, then the full text must be edited. Thanks.
Or even the tribunal, which you do have here as well. But yes, it shouldn't be safe what is in the Constitution, or not, you know, in the legislation, indeed. That should be made quite clear that it is simply a simplified version. If we can, page 45, I'm just looking, I've written a huge flag here, the others that I've made a note of. See Idenson on that particular one. We have that explained to us, didn't we? It's going to be redrafted. Right, so not much we can do about that one now. And submission of reports on page 52. Look at that one. A new provision here that you're putting in to do with reports, is it? I don't know why I've written reports there, submission of reports or new. The meeting results, WSC auditing reports, etc. What was the issue there? Simply, it wasn't really a...
Madam Chair, I cannot recall an issue on this one. I don't know whether somebody else can...
Something, yes.
But I can't recall anybody
okay.
Having an issue with it.
All right. The other couple of areas are to do with redrafting and so on. But I think what would be pertinent to some of the comments we made is this issue, which was underlined by two members, about tertiary, and to make it quite clear that we're talking about not a national apex, but there is only one national apex here. Because there has been a case for some time that we were looking at several of them at the time. The other thing I noticed what you've done is you have tried, you know, to make the language far more accessible. Instead of using words like prescriptive, you know, you use far simpler local language, as it were, local English that we all understand. And so, as I see it now, the incorporation of these second piece of legislation, the shorter one, the first, the second, turning it into one composite piece. I must say, it's been done so successfully, I haven't noticed where this has come up. I haven't seen, as it were, a salt and pepper addition here. I've really seen a very robust incorporation, and that was what worried me at the beginning, that would it look like a cut and paste, and we'd lose the consequential issues that arose in this regard. Not that we followed all of the consequential issues right to the end, but I'm sure we're going to check on that now. Because in some cases we had issues that were read and then underlined, read through the, you know, underlining and lining were all over the show, but we did get the general drift of what was being said. But I really want to, is that hand on the momentum over here?
Thank you. There was just the one sheet. I just want to know where that fits in. Because we were if does that fit in on page 2 here? Or page 3 rather, or not?
Madam Chair, I've offered quite a few apologies this morning. Let me offer another one. This is actually the substantive provision dealing with the formation of the National Apex Co-op. And I should have referred to that when you were discussing the desirability or not of this organization. There it is. The registrar shall, that is the single pager. And it immediately deals with the composition or the constitution of this organization. Upon application, by a minimum of 3 operational national. But hang on, we've...
Yeah, all right.
This is
still a work in progress. It's not going to come in on page 3. It's going to be a new section. It's location yet to be determined, which will deal with two things. Firstly, who can form the National Ethics
cooperative, and second, you could become a member of it. So no, it doesn't slot in on page 3. It will slot in somewhere.
Yes, we didn't want to deal with that because it's still in the drafting and whatever stage, but at least we now know where the one flyer comes from. Members, we dealt with substantive matters. So it's on that note that we would like to thank the subcommittee for the work that they have done in helping us to move rather swiftly forward on the bill. Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson Abaza, and your team, which I suppose at the moment is just the two of you, Honourable Hill Lewis, Honourable Salah, I mean the two other members, yes, and one is in another committee. But I understand you are proceeding to meet on this again. My only concern was while we were waiting till Thursday morning for you to meet on it. Because at the time that was during the, this is a committee week, you know, it's not the regular week. That's why I'm asking. And that's going to be related to the issue that comes up now about the next meeting, you see. All right. So members, when we look at our experts here, our many advocates, numerous advocates today, members of DTI, State Legal Advisors and so on, and other members from DTI, I'd like to thank you very much for being here. You're welcome to stay on, but really what we're going to discuss now is housekeeping matters. So if you may, through the Raj, you would be learning the knowledge. When is the next meeting? We're trying to look at that matter right now. Thank you. Okay, Honourable Barsner?
I apologize, Committee. I forgot to mention one important person that played a crucial role when I thanked the members. Alongside the Chief Director Ndumo is Mr. Rapo.
Thank you very much. Okay, members, now we're looking at announcements, closing remarks, etc. In fact, something I was just discussing with Mr. Herman and having a look at the program. And, you know, this is after all committee week. It's not our regular week. Normally, our regular day is a Wednesday, as you know. But in this kind of week, a committee week, it becomes a Tuesday. I'm sure we're all aware of that by now. And in view of that, I'm looking at what we are going to deal with. Okay, so just give me a couple of minutes.